podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Talking Point. My name is Henry Valentine. Here is what's coming up on today's show. We take a look ahead to the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix at Imola. It'll be the first sprint qualifying race of the season, so we'll be taking a look ahead at that format. It's the start of the European season, so plenty of upgrades will be coming for the teams. We'll look at who should stand to benefit. And with another race weekend ahead, we should be looking at who should be in the running for race wins. Joining me to discuss everything Imola today is Planet F1's Oliver Harden. Ollie, thank you very much for joining us. How are you?
I'm very well, Henry. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. So we've had a bit of a rare week without a race, so that should be something to look forward to. Formula One is back in our lives. Are you looking forward to heading back to Imola this weekend?
I am, and it hasn't escaped my notice that, of the emergency circuits that came onto the calendar a few years ago, Imola has almost done the last one standing. So, it does kind of symbolise all that's good about F1 in many ways. the spring sunshine and all the blossom. And obviously last season it was miserable and sin in terms of the weather.
It's meant to be this weekend as well, having seen sort of early forecast. So we could see the same again. It's something to look forward to regardless, because we had a great wet race last year there, didn't we? It was really exciting to watch. But there's the added thing of sprint qualifying this weekend, which will be making its first appearance this season. And they had penciled in six races for sprints, but that got sort of negotiated down to three. It's been, quite a divisive thing, sprint qualifying, hasn't it, in the sprint format? But there are a few changes that have been made this year, including points for the top eight now instead of the top three. And how do you think the sprint will go down this year? It's almost a second season of trying it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting with the new 22 cars. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk about that they're more raceable than they used to be, especially compared to last season. I think people were very quick to reject it in 2021, but you do have to say it had an undeniable effect. All three of the races where it was used, Silverstone, Monza and Brazil, of course, when Lewis Hamilton came from the back. So it should be very interesting to see how the new cars kind of whether the sprint format is kind of revolutionized by the new cars.
Yeah, because we saw in the sprints last year anyway, everything was kind of turned up because it was the one-third race distance. And we almost saw the same kind of gaps between cars that emerged at the end of races as well, which you can tell, which sort of pulled down the curtain on what you could see the differences between the cars were almost really. But as you say, now that the cars are more raceable, cars really have been battling quite a bit better this season, haven't they? So you could imagine that this could end up being the sort of positive debut for sprint racing that the sport had anticipated.
Yeah, absolutely. It could really take it to another level.
So Lewis Hamilton was obviously the sort of standout in the sprints last year, wasn't he? Especially at Interlagos. So that's kind of the blueprint they've been looking for here. You've had a thought about the sprint format as a whole and how it can take its place in the sport, haven't you? What are your thoughts about it so far?
Well, yeah, as I say, I think people were kind of quick to reject it last season. I think, many people were, rather than this thrill-a-minute bonanza, and people were kind of a bit disappointed to see it was basically the first stint of the race, 24 hours in advance. But, as I said, it's had an undeniable effect in terms of, especially in Monza as well. I think Ricciardo started in fifth. And I think the opportunity for two Grand Prix starts, it gives that opportunity to shuffle the pack, because I don't think he'd have won that race without the sprint format.
And likewise, you could say that about Hamilton as well, starting from 20th in the sprint, and then that gave him 10 places for the race as well.
Yeah, he obviously had to take the five-place penalty as well for the engine change, had an extra layer of intrigue. But yeah, it does kind of shuffle the pack slightly. I think if people kind of, change their expectations of what they want from the sprint race, I think it'd be much more popular, actually.
Yeah, and there's one thing that we should mention within that as well, is the fan element. I'm quite intrigued by Ross Brawn's point last year of having sort of meaningful running in his weather on all 3 days of action. And I quite like that as an idea of being a fan there at the weekend, seeing something happening on all 3 days. So it'll be a standard qualifying session on Friday, the sprint on Saturday, and the standard Grand Prix on Sunday. And Imola is going to be a sellout all weekend, which is already fantastic. So from a fan's point of view, how do you reckon that will affect things this weekend?
Yeah, it should affect things quite interestingly. It doesn't really strike me as the most ideal place to have a sprint race, actually, because in terms of action, there are obviously a lot of fast corners, but And obviously there's a potential for problem, especially with those gravel traps at the beginning of the lap. Yeah, in terms of the fan aspect, I think it's more interesting to watch, you know, more competitive action than watching three drawn out long practice sessions leading up to qualifying.
Yeah, and now this season as well, the official pole position will be the fastest driver on Friday instead of the fastest driver in the race. We're not going to go down that rabbit hole because that we could be there for hours. but for Friday's sort of standard qualifying session, as you said, you know, the Imola layout, it doesn't really particularly lend itself to that kind of racing, does it? Even though they have removed that final chicane and it's a longer straight.
Yeah, obviously it's a very good DRS section with the long kind of kink straight these days. Although it's obviously with the Russell and Bottas accident last year, there is a potential for trouble there as well.
So there are cars that could well sort of benefit from the sprints a la McLaren at Monza last year, but things do go the other way too. And there were, as with any season, the start of the European season heralds the first upgrades that are being brought to the car as well, which will be extremely interesting to watch, considering the amount of stuff that needs to happen on plenty of cars up and down the grid, isn't it? I mean, Aston Martin are obviously the team that probably need to do the most to get back towards anyone, really. But let's start at the front. Ferrari say that they're going to be upgrading their power unit for Miami in a couple of weeks' time. But again, it makes you wonder how much more performance is in there, considering they won at such a canter last time.
Well, yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, comes to mind. I think they've obviously made an amazing start to the season. And I think with the layout, and I think with the condensed kind of lead up into the race with the practice sessions with the sprint, I think it will favour the cars with a slightly wider sweet spot this weekend. And judging by Ferrari's performance in Australia, I think they are well placed to continue their good start to the season.
Yeah, exactly. They seem to have... you know, they seem to have performed well at all three circuits, and they're all sort of relatively different in the way they go about their racing as well. So that does look intriguing for them from their first few races of the season. And Red Bull have been challenging them, and obviously those three retirements in the first three races, two for Max Verstappen, really not ideal for the start of the season. But Helmut Marko has said that apparently they have now resolved the issue that Verstappen had, and the engine that Verstappen had in Australia can be returned to the pool as well, which is really crucial for them as the season goes on, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. It's something they're going to have to really get on top of, because there's already a massive gap to Leclerc in the standings for Verstappen. And I think with the sprint format this weekend offering extra points, I think there's a chance that the gap between Verstappen and Leclerc could go up beyond 60 points, more than two race wins. So that would leave them with a massive mountain to climb.
Yeah, and on Marco's point as well, he sort of got confirmation from Honda as well. You know, they are being sort of quite heavily involved in the Red Bull Powertrains project this year as they transition to doing their own thing. And it's quite interesting to hear him mention Honda outright instead of his own Red Bull team so far. But that engine has proven to be so reliable in the past few years, and for them to have such issues in the first couple of races of this year feels almost sort of wrong, doesn't it, considering the form they had?
Yeah, they're obviously amazing last year. They went toe-to-toe with Mercedes and won. Maybe the handover from Honda has been a little bit more troublesome than first anticipated.
Let's move on to Mercedes now. They have comfortably been sort of the third fastest car, but at the same time, they are second in the Constructors' Championship, which, you know, they'd have absolutely taken at this point of the season, considering how their year started. But they're not looking at supposedly bringing significant upgrades to Imola, as George Russell said anyway. But with those added data sensors that were put on Lewis Hamilton's car in Australia, I mean, added a bit of weight, but bringing much more data out of it, do you reckon that will have had an impact in sort of designing these upgrades that they're wanting to bring?
Well, yeah, you'd like to think so. Obviously, they're going to take steps to kind of resolve the problems that they've had early in the season. The question, obviously, is how long is it going to take, and will they still be in contention, you know, when they're finally in a position to fight again? The upgrades, you know, they should hopefully solve it out, because it would be better with, you know, Red Bull, Ferrari and Mercedes all fighting at the front.
Yeah, absolutely. And their issues have mostly stemmed from porpoising, haven't they? So the thing that we've been hearing is that they've almost been running with a trade-off. Do you have more porpoising and in turn more car performance, or less porpoising and an easier ride for the drivers, really? So if they're confident that once they find that solution, they can be right up there. And as you say, a three-way fight would be massive for the sport, wouldn't it? Especially in this new era.
Yeah, it's seen as a trade-off in terms of the porpoising. I think it's very, very easy to solve by simply raising the ride height. But obviously that costs performance and it leads you nowhere. So I do think there were signs, I think, in Australia that they were kind of finding a little bit of progress. I think obviously Russell and Hamilton had quite a few incidents across the weekend, maybe, running wide here and there. But I think they were able to, they were very comfortably third behind Mercedes and Ferrari compared to Saudi Arabia, when they're obviously struggling a bit more. So hopefully, it'll be a matter of time until they're at the front again.
Yeah, they've got quite a big gap to bridge, though. They've been sort of between 0.8 and a second off the pace in qualifying in the first few races. So with the other teams upgrading, their rate of development is going to have to be much, much higher, isn't it?
Indeed, yes. And I think, I don't think we can underestimate the effect of the reduced wind tunnel and CFD time this season in terms of compromising their ability to develop the 22 car. And, the way it's performed in recent races, I think that switches at the beginning of June. And, dependent on where people are in the, well, where the teams are in the championship at that point. So I would expect to see progress, much more progress from Mercedes from that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last team I wanted to mention in this is Alpine as well. They showed such pace in Australia through Fernando Alonso particularly, and they reckon that pace could well be here to stay. And they're going to be bringing a new floor as well to Imola, which is quite a significant step for them, isn't it?
It is indeed, yeah. And they've obviously made a very quietly effective start to the season. Obviously, Alonso, he was convinced he was in contention for pole in Australia prior to that incident in Q3. It would create a nice season for Alonso, actually, especially if this is his final one. If he can be snapping at the heels of the front runners, leaving some of the leading cars with a few bloody noses along the way, I think it would set up quite an interesting kind of farewell season for him.
Yeah, they said in the first couple of races as well, Alonso said that the pace in the car was sort of not necessarily hidden, but it wasn't fully on show. And they did prove that in Australia. So if they get these upgrades right, and if they can sort of show the form that they did in qualifying in particular, they could actually end up being in the mix this weekend.
Yeah, and they seem to have said they found a way to have turned the porpoising on and off, which is very interesting. I don't know how they go about that. And of all the teams at the beginning of the season, so many of them seem to be kind of firefighting. I think Alpine, after a terrible start to pre-season in Barcelona when the car set on fire, they do seem to be quietly effective at the minute, yeah.
That's a good point, actually. You could argue, probably between them and Alfa Romeo, they've probably had the two biggest turnarounds, especially from the start of testing. Like, would you agree with that?
Yeah. Obviously, it was a disaster in testing. I think it was kind of quite well disguised, their pace, because they're running very heavy. They obviously had the trouble with the DRS, where they couldn't use that for so many days, and they were quite a heavy car as well, I think. But yeah, they have been very, very quietly effective and just scoring points.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's now move on to some predictions for the weekend. Then we've already touched on the fact that it could well be wet this weekend, that we saw such drama in the wet in Imola last year, and hopefully we don't see another sort of Bottas Russell-esque crash in there as well. But assuming all being normal, it's going to be another sort of Ferrari Red Bull battle, isn't it?
Yeah, I would expect the vagaries of the sprint weekend to favour Ferrari, like I said, with the apparently widest sweet spot. I think that sets up Leclerc very, very well coming into the weekend, with Verstappen probably not far behind as usual.
Yeah, what of Carlos Sainz then as well? Because he has made no secret of the fact that he's been looking at ways to get on Leclerc's pace as well. And I mean, I don't want to say the sort of signs of panic are setting in, but because he's got such a deficit already, he's got ground to make up there. So it makes you wonder how he's going to react this weekend.
I think it's going to be very hard for him to stop falling into a number two role in sporting with him. I think he's already quite some way behind Leclerc, as is everybody at this stage, to be honest. I do think, the more competitive car this season has allowed Leclerc's class to really rise above what Sainz is capable of.
Yeah, Mattia Binotto did say that, though, that they're still going to remain free to race for now. But, you know, if push sort of slightly starts to come to shove, it does make you wonder if that's still going to be the case.
It's probably a matter of time, to be honest. I think they want to support Carlos because I think he's a very popular member of the team. He's obviously, you know, aligned himself well since arriving from McLaren at the beginning of last season. But
beat Leclerc as well. Let's not forget last season.
He did, but only by a very slender margin. I think there was a fair bit of luck involved because, okay, we can talk about Leclerc's crash in Monaco and ask if that is luck or judgment. But I think the Hungary, I think he'd been on for a very strong result in Hungary if he got through that first corner. So I do think the fact that he outscored Leclerc last season is slightly misleading.
Sergio Perez ahead of Max Verstappen. Not many of us would have predicted that, but you can probably imagine there is only a matter of time before things return to type there as well, with Verstappen coming out on top too.
Well, yeah, I can't imagine them telling Verstappen to support Perez's title challenge anytime soon.
Well, you don't know. You don't know.
But yeah, obviously Verstappen is the much faster of the two drivers there. Even though, you know, he hasn't had a pole position yet this season, who'd have thought Perez would have scored a pole before him in Saudi Arabia? But I would expect Verstappen to be pushing Leclerc all the way still.
Yeah, and the thing that's probably intriguing me most anyway is the sort of fight for best of the rest, because we've already touched on Mercedes and Alpine's upgrades, and they've, you know, they're probably going to end up being fighting out for third. But I'm intrigued as to where McLaren are going to fit in all this, because Lando Norris and Daniel Ricciardo both said that they reckoned that Jeddah and Australia sort of suited their car more as well. And we don't know where Imola fits into that, but I do wonder if they're just sort of quietly trying to get that car back on pace again, you know?
Yeah, it was difficult to know where they stood after Bahrain. You know, obviously they flew in Barcelona testing, then it all kind of fell apart. I do think their problems at the beginning of the season have been very closely linked to the problems with the brakes that they had at the end of testing. And I think Australia, there were definite signs of recovery there.
Yeah, and Haas as well. They looked sort of a bit of a shadow of themselves in Australia than they did in the first couple of races of the season. But I think that speaks to a wider point of you've mentioned cars and sweet spots already in there. And if Haas can find their sweet spot, they could probably get themselves back up there too.
Yeah, they definitely have the driver in Kevin Magnussen at the beginning. I think he's made a terrific start to the season. It's almost as if he still can't believe how lucky he is to be back. I think I listened to him as his Beyond the Grid podcast appearance during the weekend, and it's just absolutely loving life at the minute. There will be an emphasis on Haas to get back to form, because they were strangely off it in Australia.
Yeah, and Gunther did say that they'd be careful with the upgrades that they're putting on the car this season. But I quite like the way the sort of new dynamic has formed between Magnussen and Mick Schumacher, because Magnussen did say recently that Mick's not too, in his words, not too proud to actually ask for advice, because especially if you're coming in as a rookie or in your second season, I can imagine, I mean, if it were me anyway, I'd probably be much more trying to sort of go about my business in my own way. But Mick doesn't seem to be taking that approach, and it seems to be paying off for them.
Yes, there were signs of pressure perhaps in Mick's shunt in Saudi qualifying, but it does seem that they're both good professionals. Obviously, Mick comes from a good pedigree, so does Magnussen.
Yeah, just a bit.
You know, they're both grown up around this environment. I think they're both very professional and they'll get on the job and work well together.
Yeah. So in a word then, who's going to be your winner this weekend?
I can't look beyond Leclerc at the minute.
Fair enough. And there was one point that I wanted to finish on as well, actually. Sort of looking at the calendar of the 22 races that are on the calendar, this is the penultimate weekend that's effectively a standalone weekend in Formula One, so having a week before and a week after. So every race beyond Spain is going to be as part of a double or triple header, which for the team staff going around the world and everything, that's really, really demanding on them, isn't it?
It's very testing, yeah. But I suppose it's the kind of world that Liberty of Fashion now. You know, every race is an opportunity for them to make more money. And as I think, as Lewis Hamilton said at the beginning of 2020, when COVID was just beginning to take hold, cash is king. So and that does come at a human cost.
Yeah, and it's hard not to feel for them though, because you know it's all well and good saying, you know, you live in the dream, it's all part of it. Why moan? But like, ultimately, everyone deserves to be able to rest and 22 or even 23 weekends of the year away from home, which is, you know, a big thing for anyone really, with a traveling role and the hours that they work. It does make you wonder about the schedule as a whole, because Lando Norris said recently that his idea would be sort of 18 to 20 races. Zach Brown sort of proposed a solution of rotating by having a sort of 20 or 21 race calendar, and that seems to be the consensus, doesn't it? Just by dropping a few races off, that'll just make the world of difference. But you know, the Concorde agreement does account for, what is it, 24 25 races a year, so it does make you wonder if it's only going to keep going up really.
Yeah, maybe this is just the new reality that people have to get used to. I do wonder, you know, Norris speaking out against it maybe doesn't support this point, but you do wonder if in terms of team staff, it's going to become a bit of a young man's game, whereas people with families and other commitments kind of, you know, do find it as too big a stress and too big a obligation to travel around the world so many weekends every season.
Yeah, let's hope that's not the case. But I quite like Zach Brown's thinking. You know, I mean, do you feel the same that if he called it A and B markets? So there are certain races that should stay on the calendar every year, but the idea of rotating to get the sport to as many places as possible, but while sort of keeping everything intact, I guess. I mean, I kind of agree with him there. I think that's the best way forward. Like, what do you think?
Yeah, I think Paul Hembry, who used to run Pirelli, he came up with an idea a few years ago about separating the calendar into separate sections. So rather than going from Imola to Miami and then back to Barcelona, they would have kind of a European leg of the season, which we kind of already have. But to cram the American-based races and then the Asian ones into particular parts of the year would possibly be a solution.
Yeah, absolutely. But Oliver, thank you very, very much for joining me today. And we will no doubt discuss things once the race finishes on Sunday.
Thank you.
And thank you to you for watching or listening to us as well. Make sure you head to planetf1.com for all your latest news on Formula One throughout the week. And we will be with you on another episode of Talking Point after the flag drops in Imola.
Sports Social Podcast Network.